at the end. Unfortunately, we're going to be in 1 Samuel tonight. Not really. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We're going to be in the book of Ruth. You can go ahead and open there. We'll be over in Ruth for the next few weeks. So I was just kidding about that. You can go ahead and open up to Ruth, which is just after Judges. So about the center of the Old Testament, a little bit before the center of the Old Testament. Sarah and I didn't have that song sung at our wedding, but we did recite those verses, and so now Sarah finds herself in Leander, Texas, of all places, as wherever we go, and so it is a great passage about commitment and love. Of course, I did tell Sarah, I was like, I think it's a beautiful sign of commitment, but it's between two women, so I don't know how that works out in a wedding, but anyways, that's enough about that. Okay, Ruth chapter 1, and we're going to, each week we'll work through a different chapter. It's 4 chapters long, and I would encourage you, and I've said this before, I think, and maybe not about Ruth, but I would encourage you to spend some time over the next few weeks reading through the book of Ruth. I think that if you do that, if you have the story in your mind as we come together each week, I think that you'll find that our time together in the book will be more fruitful and meaningful to you. And so take some time, 4 chapters, 20, 25 minutes is about all it'll take you to work through it. But it is just an incredible story that, like the minor prophets that we spent so much time on over the last few months, like them, this one kind of gets lost, sort of buried in the Old Testament. And a lot of times, of course, we spend more time in the New Testament, people on this side of the cross, but there is so much that we can learn about God, about God's desire for us as his people from books like Ruth. Let's go ahead and jump in. I'm going to read verses 1 through 5 as we get started this evening. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. So this is what we know about Ruth from the first few verses. Of course, the situation is located in the time of the judges. We're not given the specific time that this was actually written. We know that it's in the time of the judges, but when it was actually penned, we're not sure. Some scholars hold to it being pre-exilic, some hold to it being post-exilic. Some of the factors that they look at to decipher when this was actually written down was the type of Hebrew that was employed. Was it what some would call standard biblical Hebrew, or was it late biblical Hebrew? Daniel Block, one commentator, and others used that kind of terminology to talk about it. The problem with a book like Ruth is that it uses both, and so that doesn't really help out too much. There is a mention of a custom that did not endure throughout time with the Hebrews, and it has to do with taking off the shoes, and we'll read about that later on as we work through this. But there was a custom that seemed to be existing in one part of Israelite history and not another part, and so maybe that points to an earlier date as opposed to a later date for it actually being written. And then the placement of it in the canon comes into play. You know, should it be here? Should it be part of the writings? Is it history? Where should it be located in the Old Testament canon? Again, these are all factors that they look at, but commentators and scholars go back and forth on that. And so, it's uncertain when it was actually written down, but we're told right there in verse 1 that it took place in the time of the judges. So that's the situation that's going on chronologically. That's what we know about it. And historically, there was a famine that was going on in the land. Now, from a study in the book of Judges, a natural question that would come out of that was the famine that they were experiencing that time, some sort of judgment from God on the people because of their unfaithfulness. We know that that wouldn't be out of the range of possibility for God as he interacted with the people in a time like this. So was this a sign of judgment on the people? And that's going to bring about some significance as we work through Ruth in the coming weeks. The unfaithfulness of the people. Was the famine something that God brought on the people because of that? Of course, geographically, it starts off in Bethlehem. It ends up in Moab, and it's going to come back to Bethlehem. It's going to come full circle, as we'll see here in a little bit. And then the characters that are here are introduced in the first few verses. We have Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And then, of course, we have Orpah and Ruth as well. Interesting thing about the meanings of the names of the sons, Mahlon and Chilion. In Hebrew, the name Mahlon means to be sick. That's a great name to receive from your parents, right? Sick. Sick boy. And then Chilion means to be finished. So you have to appreciate that name too, right? You're finished, boy. Now, in their names, it's almost an indicator of what's going to take place just a little bit later on in the story. Now, about the Moabites who are introduced here, or at least Moab is introduced here, we have quite a bit of information from them from the Bible, that their origins are rooted in the incestuous relationship of Lot and his daughters. They resisted Israelite passage when the Israelites came out of Egypt. The Moabite women seduced the Israelite men. Israel was to exclude Moab from the assembly of the Lord. In Judges, the Moabites oppressed the Israelites under King Eglon. So there's kind of a storied history with the relationship between Moab and the people of God. There was a lot of animosity between the two groups, and so it's interesting that that is the place that Elimelech, along with Naomi, are heading because of the famine. It says that Naomi's sons marry Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. Now we have to ask the question, the question based on what we know about the Old Testament law, were they allowed to marry Moabite women? Is that something that they could do? We think about a passage like Deuteronomy chapter 7, verses 3 and 4 that says, "Do not intermarry with them. Do not give your daughters to their sons or take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your children away from following me to serve other gods. And the Lord's anger will burn against you and will quickly destroy you." But what's going to take place, as we're seeing here in the book of Ruth, that the sons, Mahlon and Chilion, take for themselves Moabite women, Orpah and Ruth. Was this a direct sign of or act of disobedience towards God's law? It's just in there. It's something worth asking. The scene by the end of verse 5, Naomi was alone in Moab, right? Mahlon and Chilion are gone. One's finished, one's sick to the point of death. But she's going to have two daughters-in-laws. Now, we need to get this in mind, the culture at this time. It was a man's world through and through. A woman left to herself was in a dire situation. It was a patriarchal society. So she had already fled from her home country because of a famine, and now she finds herself alone in this other situation, in foreign territory. That's where we're at the end of verse 5. 6 through 10 now. "When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah." So they're heading back to Naomi's home. "Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, 'Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband.' Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud, and said to her, 'We will go back with you to your people.'" Okay, a few things to note here about verses 6 through 10. First of all, Naomi desired for the Lord to show kindness to Orpah and Ruth. This word kindness is so important. We've brought it up already so many times in this as we work through the Old Testament in the evenings. The word there is hesed. It's a loaded term. It's kind of like that term agape that we read about in the New Testament. It's so much more than kindness. It's so much more even than love. It's a sense of covenantal, merciful love. Love that is rooted in a promise of a right relationship. Love that is gracious. Love that is just. This is the kind of love, the kind of kindness that wells out of God. So this is the kind of love that Naomi desires the Lord to show Orpah and Ruth, Moabite women. Secondly, Naomi mentioned that these Moabite women demonstrated hesed. They demonstrated this kind of love, of kindness toward her. So as they have shown kindness, Naomi desires that the Lord shows it back. So it's a reciprocal kind of relationship there. And then finally, Naomi spoke a blessing over them, that God would work on their behalf to help them find husbands, thus security, remembering that this is a man's world that they're living in. It's an important blessing for them. Of course, it's a blessing that Naomi was hoping she could experience herself, as she is now alone as well. The daughters-in-law said they would go back with Naomi, but here's how Naomi responds. But Naomi said, this is verses 11 through 14, but Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons? Who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Okay, once again, we see the importance of marriage. Naomi's response, "Return home. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons? Who could become your husbands?" This is a serious business that Naomi is talking here, understanding that their security, their protection would come through a husband, and she understood that she wasn't going to be able to provide that for them. Now, we have to wonder a little bit, did Naomi think that the only possibility of them receiving another husband was one of her own children, one of her own sons? Why does she think that? Why does she ask that series of questions? Perhaps she's going back to Old Testament law about levirate marriage. This idea that there would have to be a kinsman, a relative that could protect them. Of course, there's going to be maybe some foreshadowing of what's going to take place in the book of Ruth. But maybe in her mind, understanding the law, if they were to marry, it was to be a relative of hers. Perhaps that's what's taking place here. In verse 13, she says, "It is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." Now, what is Naomi demonstrating here in a statement like that? Is this a bitter complaint that's cloaked in faith? Is this the cry of just a very immature believer? Is this a statement of a person who once had faith in the Lord, but no longer has faith? When she makes that statement, what is she demonstrating at that point? I think maybe it's a little bit of all of that. Frustration, anger, hurt, fear of what the future is going to look like for her. She does acknowledge the Lord, and so there's some faith in that, saying that if my situation has gotten this bad, it's because of the Lord's activity or the Lord's inactivity in my life. And so she makes this kind of statement. Now Orpah says, "Peace, I'm out." and you notice Naomi does not fight her on that or anything. She really didn't say, "Peace, I'm out." But that's kind of a modern day paraphrase of that. But Orpah, she goes on back home to be with her Moabite people. But it says that Ruth clung to her. Now think about it. When have you heard that word cling or clung in the Bible before? That's a word that's used in Genesis chapter 2, talking about marriage, clinging to one another. This idea of connectedness, a deep, abiding relationship. That's what Ruth feels. That's what Ruth does toward Naomi. She clings to her. And we're going to see this play out even more in the following verses, 15 through 18. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to take a turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. Before getting into that really cool passage there, starting in verse 16, we need to talk about verse 15. It's an interesting passage. It's an interesting thing for Naomi to say to Ruth. So Orpah is going back to the Moabite people, meaning that she is going to live the lifestyle of the Moabites. That's, we can see it right there in the passage. And what Naomi says to Ruth in this passage is rather troubling. She says, "Why don't you go back with Orpah and just get back into the society that you're used to, worship those gods, and just live the life that you had been living previous to knowing anything about Yahweh." Again, we have to call into question to some extent where Naomi is at this point in her relationship to God. Someone that was steadfast, someone that was deeply rooted in a relationship with God, you'd have to wonder if they would ever say anything like that. Go back to worshiping the gods you had worshiped at one point. But let's keep in mind that there's more to the story than what we read about in chapter 1. So we're going to look at some progression in the faith of Naomi as we move through this story. But at this point, I'd like us to just notice that Naomi's faith is, in my opinion, is wavering in making statements like this to Ruth. But Ruth's reply is beautiful and demonstrates, I believe, an incredible amount of faith. And remember this, where did she get that faith from? Where did she learn to say something so incredibly? Where did she learn about Yahweh? Perhaps she learned it from Naomi. She says, "Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die." Ruth's selflessness here and her commitment, her dedication to Naomi is just awesome. It's an incredible commitment to another person. Now, I have to reflect on my own life, and I'd hope that you'd reflect on yours too. What if we excelled in this kind of commitment to one another? I believe if we did, we'd be willing to be honest about who we are with one another, because we know that the relationship that we share with another is rooted in a beautiful promise, a beautiful level of commitment. We would be willing to truly understand others, listen to understand, not always just jump to a conclusion that's maybe a negative one. Maybe give people the benefit of the doubt if we truly have this sort of commitment toward one another. Perhaps we'd be willing to sacrifice our desires for those of another person. Would it have been better for Ruth to go with Orpah back to Moab? Perhaps. We don't know. But she showed an incredible amount of hesed, an incredible amount of love here, and said, "Naomi, where you go, I will go. Your God will be my God." Speaking of Yahweh, the one true God there. We'd be willing to support one another if we had that kind of commitment toward one another. Saying, "How can I help you? What do you need?" what resources can I help you with so that you can accomplish what you need to accomplish. Beautiful picture of selfless love. That is, in a couple sentences, that is hesed. That is covenant love. Verses 19 through 22 then. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. So at this point, understandably so, Naomi is incredibly disappointed. She says, "Don't call me Naomi anymore, but call me Mara. My life is bitter," is what that means. Says she went away full. And I think when she says she went away full, she's obviously not talking about food at that point, as Bethlehem was going through a drought and having a famine. But I think she's talking about she had her husband. She had her son. She had that security. She had that protection that came from men in a male-dominated society. But now she had no one. She had Ruth, but she did not have those men any longer. She also, it's interesting here, she uses the word Almighty for God. It's the first time that she does so. But the way that she does it is interesting. Of course, that's the word El Shaddai. Typically, when people used Almighty, El Shaddai for God, they were highlighting His power, His authority over all creation, really all people. But it's interesting, she emphasizes His power and says, it's that power that's been oppressing me. It's God who can do all things has left me empty. I went away full, and now I have nothing. Don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. Now you have to ask yourself the question, is this misplaced blame here on God? What is she doing here? Why is she saying these things? Of course, you can't help but be reminded of the Psalms when you read what she's saying here. There were times where David would cry out to God, "Why are you doing this to me? Why have you forsaken me?" Things like that. So perhaps what Naomi is demonstrating, even in this frustration and anger, is a level of faith that God, who can act, will act on her behalf. Perhaps that's what's taking place. But at this point, as we conclude tonight, we'll just have a couple questions. Maybe these are cliffhangers. Maybe there's some suspense that's built into this. I don't know. You have to come back for chapter 2. But will Naomi remain bitter? That's the first question. And the second one is, will Ruth regret her decision to cling to Naomi? Think about that. Ruth's like, "Where you go, I will go. Your God will be my God." So Ruth and Naomi show up in Bethlehem. Everyone's excited to see them. And what does Ruth hear Naomi say in the moment? "The Almighty has made my life terrible. I was full and now I have nothing. He feels as if He's oppressing me. I can't believe this. Don't call me Naomi anymore. Call me Mara. My life is bitter." Will Ruth regret her decision to cling to Naomi? So that's all for tonight. We'll pick up chapter 2 next week. Daryl's going to lead us in a song. If there's anybody here tonight that needs the prayers of our church family, we'd be so glad to pray with you or for you. If anybody here tonight is ready to put your Lord on in baptism, we'd be glad to assist you in that. More importantly, we'd be glad to celebrate with you in that decision. So if you have any needs, you can come forward now as we stand and sing this song together.